You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN 91.9 FM. I'm Katie Frankowitz. Iwako's fire chief is on administrative leave following his arrest on multiple charges that include alleged child rape, molestation, and pornography. 43-year-old Jeffrey S. Archer was arrested on January 9th by the Pacific County Sheriff's Office. According to court documents, he faces 37 charges tied to events that allegedly occurred as far back as 2013 and as recently as 2019. The Chinook Observer reports that the three known victims were between the ages of 2 and 14 years old at the time of the alleged assaults. Archer does not have a criminal history. He made a preliminary court appearance on Monday, and his bail was set at $500,000. Assistant Fire Chief Brian Davis is now serving as interim fire chief for the Ilwaco Fire Department. Newly elected Ilwaco Mayor Eddie Hillard told KMUN he will be discussing further steps with legal counsel and that his priority is to make sure the fire department continues to operate and ensure safety for the community while Archer's case is ongoing. At Hillard's first meeting as mayor on Monday night, City Councilor Matt Lesnau introduced a resolution that called for Archer to be fired effective immediately, a move City Councilor Josh Phillips also supported. But the other city councilors and several community members who spoke at the meeting urged a more cautious approach. They said Archer faces serious charges but has not been convicted of any crimes yet. Lesnau dropped the resolution when it was clear he did not have the support of a majority of the city council. A bill that would transfer ownership of a former youth camp property to the Chinook Indian Nation seems unlikely to move forward. State Senator Jeff Wilson, a Longview Republican, represents Pacific County and other Southwest Washington communities. He is the lead backer of the bill in the state legislature. He told the Chinook Observer he was not optimistic that Senate Bill 5247 would be passed and signed into law this year, citing a short session and a state budget crunch. Only one co-sponsor signed onto the bill during last year's legislative session, and it did not receive a public hearing in the Washington Senate's State Government, Tribal Affairs, and Elections Committee. While Wilson says the bill has lost steam, he still believes transferring the property to the Chinook would provide economic opportunities for both the tribe and the Nacelle community. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. As Western Washington farmers begin the long task of cleanup and recovery following major floods last month, local organizations are raising money to provide financial relief. Community Food Co-op in Bellingham is one of them. CEO Lisa Sedler says farmers have immediate needs that could affect this season's harvest, such as the ability to buy seeds or livestock feed.
We're very well connected in the community and able to distribute funds quickly, as opposed to FEMA or some of these more federal relief efforts. They take months and years. We can do it in a matter of weeks.
A similar effort is taking place in Seattle. Far More Washington is a nonprofit dedicated to helping farmers. Executive Director Joy Moody says people can donate money or time.
We have this sweat equity program where we get volunteers together and go out to the farm.
At the farm, Moody says volunteers usually help with cleaning or weeding. If you live east of the Cascade Mountains in Washington and you've got glass bottles and jars piling up, a volunteer group in Yakima can help you recycle them. NWPB's senior environmental correspondent Courtney Flatt visited a collection site.
Bottles of wine, jars of spaghetti sauce, jugs of hot sauce. In a parking lot, volunteers are dumping all these used glass containers into a blue shipping container. For several years, the nonprofit Yakima Recycles Glass has collected empty containers from Yakima area residents. That's because there's not a glass recycling facility east of the Cascades.
Unfortunately, a lot of glass still winds up getting buried, but we're doing what we can to change that.
That's Ron Shaw. He heads up Yakima Recycles Glass. They've already collected more than 30 tons of glass. He says it can be logistically challenging, but keeping all that glass out of landfills is important because it won't break down. The glass will eventually make its way to a recycler in Portland. I'm Courtney Flatt in Yakima.
You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. Turning now to news out of Oregon. The two people shot in Portland last week by U.S. Border Patrol are facing criminal charges. Both have been released from Portland hospitals and into federal custody. The U.S. Department of Justice charged Luis David Nino Moncado for aggravated assault on a federal officer with a deadly or dangerous weapon and for depredation of federal property. A federal judge set his preliminary hearing for later this week. The woman who was shot by Border Patrol in Portland has been charged in Texas with illegal entry into the United States. She's being held at the Northwest ICE Processing Center in Tacoma, Washington, according to facility records. A cyber attack on an Oregon state agency has leaked thousands of people's sensitive information. The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality appears to have known about the leak for about 6 months, but more than 4,000 people didn't receive notifications until last month. Organizations should generally act more quickly, according to James Lee, president of the Identity Theft Resource Center. That's a nonprofit that advocates for identity protection.
It is always better to get the information out as quickly as possible. The sooner that we can get people notified that their information has been compromised, the sooner they can take steps to protect themselves.
DEQ staff say they have changed record-keeping procedures in response to the attack. The agency has contracted with a company called IDX to provide protection services. Oregon lawmakers are in the state capitol this week for a set of hearings teeing up next month's legislative session. Dirk Vanderhart reports.
Legislators hold interim committee hearings every few months while out of session, but the meetings this week hold special importance. Lawmakers are starting to roll out their priorities for the legislative session that begins February 2. There's a lot to do in the span of that session's 5 weeks. Lawmakers are grappling with how to close a hole in the state's budget. That includes a nearly $250 million deficit in road funding created when GOP lawmakers successfully delayed transportation taxes passed last year. Lawmakers are also looking for ways to boost the state's economy by improving Oregon's business climate, an initiative Governor Tina Kotek has made a priority this year. Plenty more will be on the table, too. During even-year short sessions, each of Oregon's 90 lawmakers is allowed to introduce two bills. Legislative committees can introduce three apiece. I'm Dirk Vanderhart, reporting.
Oregon State Police have released information about a fatal crash that occurred in Clatsop County on Highway 26 near Seaside on Saturday. According to police, 47-year-old Smith Ward Humphreys of Warrenton was driving westbound on Highway 26 when he crossed into the eastbound lanes to pass cars ahead of him. He struck an oncoming Toyota RAV4 driven by 37-year-old Daisy Vanessa Camarena of Whittier, California. Humphreys was declared dead at the scene. Camarena and her passenger suffered reported serious injuries and were taken to an area hospital. The highway was impacted for approximately 4 hours during the on-scene investigation. A road in the Oregon Coast Range that connects the communities of Kernville and Siletz has been closed for a month now because of a landslide. The Oregon Department of Transportation says the slide destroyed Highway 229 from milepost 14 to 15 in Lincoln County, and it could take years to rebuild. The water-soaked ground limits access and increases the risk of additional movement or new slides, ODOT said in a press release. ODOT's working with experts to evaluate the slide and develop options. There is no local detour in place now, but ODOT says it's working on a long-term detour plan and potential short-term solutions. Turning now to news out of Idaho. The state can once again enforce a law that stops transgender people from changing the sex listed on their birth certificates. SBR's Owen Henderson reports.
For years, a federal court order blocked Idaho from acting on the law. But last year, the Supreme Court restricted the scope of such injunctions. And late last week, a federal judge lifted the court order. State Attorney General Raul Labrador celebrated the decision, writing in a statement that birth certificates should not be, quote, subject to how an individual may feel, end quote. But Lambda Legal Senior Counsel Peter Wren says this doesn't change the underlying facts of the case.
Having to out yourself as transgender whenever you have to present an identity document to a bank or to an employer or to a government official endangers your very basic safety and puts you at risk of discrimination and harassment and sometimes even violence.
Wren says it's still possible for a similar injunction to block the law again, but it would need to come from a class action lawsuit. Because updated birth certificates are required to change the gender marker on Idaho driver's licenses, he says more people may be motivated to come forward and challenge the law. I'm Owen Henderson, reporting.
Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Team. That includes host and producer Skylar Butenshin, volunteer Sylvia Thorpe, and me, news director Katie Frankowitz. That's all from us today. This is KMUN.